Hello, and welcome to Fort Wayne Ballet's Kinetic Conversations. Our next few episodes of Kinetic Conversations will be focused on our last main stage production of Romeo and Juliet. Each of these episodes will feature elements of the story, backstory, and delve into what to look for and what makes this ballet a standard piece of ballet repertoire. Today, we start with our artistic director, Karen Gibbons Brown. So welcome, Karen.
Oh, thanks for having me today.
So let's just talk a little bit to sort of set the stage about the ballet and sort of lay the groundwork. Before we get into Prokofiev and some of the backstory there, what exactly will people see in terms of Romeo and Juliet? Is it the standard play? Is it what they're familiar with? Are there some twists?
There are always twists in live theater. However, the basic premise is Shakespeare's original play from the late 1500s.
Basically, all the same characters. You're going to see Romeo, you're going to see Tybalt, you're going to see Mercutio. All of those things will be there.
Romeo, Juliet, Tybalt, Mercutio, Benvolio. I'm sure I'm leaving somebody out. The Capulets versus the Montagues. Paris, the young duke that she's to marry.
Let's talk a little bit about getting created, because as always the case, as we've talked about when we talk about Tchaikovsky or anything else, what you see now and people think of a standard repertoire and seamless getting it on the stage is never the way it works out. So, I was doing a little bit of research on the creation of this with some interesting caveats that Prokofiev, when he picked it, he wanted a happy ending. And that
yes.
Happy ending was something he was going to take to his grave, and it ultimately got changed, but he was adamant he wanted a happy ending.
That Juliet and Romeo reunited in the crypt, yes.
And upon reading some more about that, actually one of the things that really sort of held that up was the Soviet Committee on Culture were like, no, we can't do this. It doesn't make any sense.
It's a classic.
You don't do this. And it also was around the same time that they were having issues with what they considered not staying in line. So there was a 1936, the same time there were things with Shostakovich and calling people out and saying, you can't do this and you're not staying in your lane. But I was looking at some of the background as well. There was a back and forth between the Kirov and the Bolshoi as well.
Right. The whole intent was to have a lovely vehicle for a big ballerina there. She was a jewel of the state, Galina Ulanova. And it was written, scored in 1935, but it didn't premiere until 1940. And it did go back and forth. It ended up with the Bolshoi. And again, that's where Galina Ulanova had her career. And she was such an important figure that they held the premiere until she was ready. She'd gotten ill. She got well. Then they had the other choreographic challenges that you always have when you create a ballet. And it finally made its premiere, and she was considered the Juliet. It was choreographed by a Russian, the head of the Bolshoi, Lavrovsky was his name. And it's not usually the version that you see in today's ballet world.
Going back a little bit, as you said, the back and forth in terms of, there's a little clip that I found that's actually from Prokofiev himself. That he was talking about at the end of December of 1934, I returned to Leningrad specifically for negotiations with the Kirov Theater, expressed my wish to find a lyrical scenario for a ballet. We started recalling various, and included Pelias and Melisande, Tristan and Isolde, and Romeo and Juliet. And I immediately clung to the fact that I wanted to do that, but I wanted a happy ending. went back and forth, and he said, we didn't conclude a contract with the Kirov. I arrived in Moscow, and the chief conductor of the Bolshoi Theater grabbed me and said, no, come to us. We'll put the contract together. And immediately contracted it. Contract was signed in summer of 1935. Theater gave me the opportunity to work in the summer home and the holiday home in the Bolshoi Theater, where I managed to almost finish the ballet, but again, was not staged. The ballet was not put on the stage at that time yet. Rejected at the Bolshoi Theater. Back and forth.
Constant.
So when we talk about the same things we've talked about with getting the Tchaikovsky ballets on there, I think it's interesting that these ballets that have become thought of as standard repertoire, many of them, it's amazing they made it to the stage at all.
Agreed. And I think, too, you mentioned the time period that this was created in. So many people think of this as a classical ballet, and it's not really. It's a 20th century work. But when you see it, the movements are very classical ballet oriented. However, the partnering for the men and the women, the lifts and the lines that they make in space are very different than what you would have seen in that classical era with Petipa.
Well, to your point, it's a 20th century ballet,
right?
And there are things that are very different. We're not dealing with sylphs and fairies and princes and all that kind of
people.
Stuff.
We're
dealing with people.
There is not a fairy to be found in this ballet.
And some of that, I think, from talking to some of the dancers, in some ways almost throws them a little bit, because they're not dealing with the cover of I'm a fairy or I'm a sylph or I'm a something. And it is very much I think probably overlaid with the fact that you've got all this going on in the world in the 20th century. It's a very different, it's not fantasy, it's reality in a different way.
Right. Well, of course, you know, you hear stories of Romeo and Juliet in different incantations all through history, but you were talking about them being more real people as opposed to ethereal creatures or make-believe or fantasy. And I think that's a part of what makes this ballet a little more difficult than some of the others, because you often have pantomime, which carries the story forward, or you have acting, but your acting is something that's a little unreal. But in this ballet, it's real human emotion, real feelings, real stories that happen to people. And I think that you said it throws the dancers. It's a little more raw, for lack of a better word, in the rehearsal process. And the coaching with the acting components is a lot different than you would coach the acting in some of the other, like Swan Lake.
Sure. And what I mean by the conversation of throw the dancer just puts them in a different place.
Sure.
Not that it's thrown them in terms of being in the room, but
Doing a beautiful job.
It's a different, you're not dealing with 24 swans and doing that. It's a little bit different.
It's real feeling.
Well, with that, we mentioned it's 20th century ballet, but you also have Prokofiev that not too far after that writes another 20th century ballet in Cinderella. That's a very different type of ballet. Again, we go back to a
with a happy ending.
With a happy ending. I don't know what his deal is with the happy endings, but he...
is the time period.
But maybe talk about those juxtapositions. I know that the success of the score, he wanted to create another score. The Romeo and Juliet score is pretty amazing. It's pretty perfect. And it's difficult to do that, but you also are capitalizing on some momentum, but you're going back to something different. So maybe talk about the juxtaposition of the two ballets. If anybody's seen both of them, sometimes people don't even realize that Cinderella is a 20th century ballet because of the way it's laid out.
Right. And interestingly enough, at that particular time period, both of those ballets end softly, orchestrally, softer than the more classical ballets of the Tchaikovsky time or the Petipa time. I think that Prokofiev really lays out the choreography for the dancers. His work seems to be very thematic. For instance, in Cinderella, all of her emotions and different parts of her character are presented in the overture. In Romeo and Juliet, Juliet has a theme. She has a theme as a young girl, a theme as a shy young lady at the ball, a theme as a more grown up in 2 or 3 days, mature Juliet. Everything is thematic. As a dancer, it guides your movement quality, intensity, impetus for movement, the dynamic of your movement. It's amazing to dance to, really is.
It's also referred to often as a men's ballet, largely because of the amount of characters, correct?
Right.
And so talk about that.
Well, a couple of things. I think that there are more named men characters in Romeo and Juliet than there are other ballets that we may do. So in Swan Lake, you have Siegfried and Benno, his friend, and then you have a lot of other characters that don't necessarily carry names with specific characterizations. In Romeo and Juliet, you have Juliet, then you have, as we mentioned earlier, Mercutio, Benfolio, Romeo, Tybalt, Paris, and then all of the men that represent the two sides, the Montagues and the Capulets. The ladies have Juliet, and then you have the supporting characters. You have the harlots, you have the bridesmaids, you have the village people, but not named characters. I also think that one of the reasons we say it's a men's ballet is the guys have a great time rehearsing it. What could be more fun than playing with a sword all day long as a grown-up? And that's what you're supposed to be doing. Of course, they have fencing lessons and combat coaching. We've brought in a combat coach to help us as well, so that nobody gets hurt. It's a safe fight, but it's exciting and it's exhilarating. And what guy that dances would not have fun doing that?
Talking a little bit about the female character as well, Juliet, having conversations with some of the dancers and some of our guest artists about their perspective about whose ballet is it really? Is it really Juliet's ballet? Does she really shape the tone of the evening in terms of the character moving the story along, or is it something else? What's interesting about that is a lot of this is based on how you play it, correct? I mean, depending on who you're dealing with and what you choose to represent Romeo as or Juliet, you can do that different ways.
You have some artistic freedom. So you mentioned guest artists. Our guest artists aren't the ones on the stage. The ones on stage are Fort Wayne Ballet dancers, but they have come in to help us this season specifically. How you choose to play Romeo and Juliet is often guided by the person at the front of the room or the artistic director. You do have that leeway. There are specifics. We were just in a rehearsal for Lady Capulet a moment ago, and there are certain specifics that you have to meet with the musical notes But in between those specific places, you get to interpret the character as you see fit. And it's the same for all of the characters in the ballet. So the artistic growth of the dancer in a process like that is far more significant quite often than some of the other ballets that you might see.
Well, and you mentioned earlier in this conversation about the score and the way it lines up with movement and the story. And I'm thinking about some other 20th century ballets and similar relationships when I think of, for example, like Petrushka. Once you see the movement and hear the music, you can't separate them.
It's the story.
It just marries it. And it's not about whether you like the story or not. The visual is so, it drives it. And similarly with this, once you see and hear some of the score together, it's very difficult to separate. So if you listen to the suite or something, it's very difficult not to picture what's going on because of the way things marry.
Well, we always tell our students and our company dancers that we are the visualization of the music on the page. So if it's legato or staccato, it's your job to interpret that as it was written. And I think that this is a beautiful score to do that with. You know, there are other scores for Romeo and Juliet, but more often than not, sometimes people will choose the Tchaikovsky one. It's shorter, of course, and you don't often see Delius, but Prokofiev is generally the go-to for the ballet.
With that said, let's sort of maybe wrap up this interview with some things to look for. Somebody's going to come, and what are some things that might be beyond just the story they know, or some things to maybe whet the appetite as you're coming to see the ballet version of Romeo and Juliet?
Backing that up, you asked who drives the story.
Right,
is
right.
It Juliet or Romeo or other characters? I think it is really the meshing of the two characters and the magic that they create together that sets the tone for everybody else around them on the stage. Some things to look for. I always feel obligated in this day and time specifically to say we hold to the story. This is the Shakespeare story. So if you're coming or you're bringing, still require reading in school, but just be aware that it is the Shakespeare story. It does not end happily. That doesn't mean it's not a lovely ballet and a lovely evening. It's just really amazing. But I also think some things to look for are the precision in the sword fighting with the men. You don't see this in a lot of classical ballets. The core of the ballet doesn't always dance. There's a lot of acting, so they help carry the story through with the acting. They dance, but there's as much acting as there is dancing. And that's usually the reverse in more classical ballets. I think those are two really big things to look for. And then the difference in the characters. Everybody has had the opportunity, or is having the opportunity as we're working on it now, to create the character that they would like it to be. They have guidance, and there are some requirements, but there's a lot of artistic freedom. So watching them grow is really wonderful.
One question I have, what are the pillows about? Why are the men carrying pillows? I'm just really curious what that's about.
It's, you know, this, good question. We call that music the pillow dance, actually. It is a couple of things. It's strong and it represents some sense of royalty. But then the men put the pillow on the floor and they kneel on it, and it's to protect their knees.
Well, again, I was wondering about that. It's, you know, it's a different time period, but they're all carrying the pillows, so I was just wondering about that. To finish up, we talked about 20th century ballets. This is obviously one of those ballets that is a milestone in many ways because it's different, but it also requires men. It requires a different maturity. It requires things that sometimes are part of the 20th century as opposed to the 19th century ballets. What other 20th century ballets... You've done this one. Are there any others that you're looking at that we've never done in Fort Wayne Ballet, story or otherwise? And let's avoid the late stuff when we get to purely repertoire-based, but any type of story ballet or anything specific in the same type of genre as opposed to saying Serenade with Balanchine, which is slightly different in terms of what we're doing.
Well, I think that's a tricky question because as we get into the 20th century, more often than not, the more known works are abstract ballets as opposed to ballets with stories or ballet d'action, ballets of action. So to choose a 20th century ballet with a story that is similar to the more classical ballets you would see, you have Petrushka, you have Firebird, you have some of those works, Afternoon of a Faun, but you more often than not, the ballets that most people think of in 20th century are the abstract.
Well, and just to kind of conclude this, we've toyed around with the idea, and we may do something in the future related to those ballets that are signature ballets of the 20th century. A lot of the Ballet Russe ballets that are, to your point, the ones you mentioned, are not, they're not full evenings, they're sections.
Right.
I mean, when you look at Petrushka, it's relatively short. When you look at Firebird, relatively short and compared to, and might be paired with another ballet as opposed to what many people are used to, where this is the story for the night. So if we were to look at those, and maybe just to look ahead, doing those ballets today and maybe reimagining them or rethinking them, what kind of elements might that add to where we are right now in the ballet, Fort Wayne Ballet, as opposed to what we've traditionally done?
I think quite often when you reimagine something, you hold to the intent of the original storyline or the libretto, so you stick to that. Another one that comes to mind as you were speaking is Sacre du Printemps, or the Rite of Spring. You know, that was done by Ballet Russe, and you see it in the costumes are very heavy, very ornate, but then there are more contemporary versions where they're in one version, they're in nothing, but in next to nothing. So it depends on how you're choosing to reimagine. I can see us at this point in our growth with our wonderful dancers reimagining all those ones that for students, when they open the history books of dance and see those ballets, those are the ones that we can reimagine and recreate. The abstract ones are beautiful as well in a very different way.
Well, we'll see whether that's something we'll be seeing in the next few seasons or not, but stay tuned. We'll see where that goes.
Follow us.
So with that, Karen, thank you for being here, and we'll look forward to seeing Fort Wayne Ballet on the stage with the Fort Wayne Philharmonic for Romeo and Juliet very shortly.
Thanks for having me.
Fort Wayne Ballet will perform Romeo and Juliet April 19th and 20th with the Fort Wayne Philharmonic at the Arch United Center. You can purchase tickets by visiting the Fort Wayne Ballet website, artstix.org, or calling the box office at 422-4226. If you'd like to receive notifications on future podcasts, please like the podcast and go to fortwayneballet.org to sign up for notifications on performances, podcasts, and more ballet news. You'll also find a library of past episodes on our website in the menu of options. Until next time, I'm Jim Sparrow, and thanks for listening to Kinetic Conversations with Fort Wayne Ballet.
Has been a Wing Shout production.